From west to east and kingdom to kingdom, you're listening to the Diz Unplugged Connecting with Walt podcast. Connecting with Walt is brought to you by Dreams Unlimited Travel, experts at helping you plan the perfect Disney vacation. Visit them on the web at dreamsunlimitedtravel.com. Hello and welcome to episode 52 of Connecting with Walt. I am your host and Diz historian Michael Bowling, and I am joined by my co-host, producer, and good friend Craig Williams. Craig, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. How are you, Michael?
I'm doing well. Thank you. Spring is in the air, and so is the pollen.
Everywhere I look around.
Yes. So, but I'm excited. You know, I'm planning my. I haven't been to Disneyland in quite a while. I'm getting ready to go down there and see the new Pixar Fest.
Yeah, I can't. I hope that I will get the chance to see it. I mean, I know I will get the chance to see it at some point, but. I hope that it's not ruined for me completely before I get the chance to see it.
Well, I'm just hoping you don't run out of all the different popcorn buckets that they're selling down there.
Yeah, I saw the Green Alien popcorn bucket for annual pass holders only. It makes me very happy that I am currently a Disneyland annual pass holder.
Yeah. Yeah, and they have a Sully one, and they have, yeah. I think, there's a little... There's a sipper cup.
Of Mike, yeah.
Yeah. I have to get that.
Lots of cool stuff for Pixar Fest. And the early buzz from the fireworks scene, some of the pictures, and from that just... I'm very impressed with what they're putting on for it. And I don't know if Californians take for granted the amazing food that comes around with their festivals, but... I think there's going to be some good stuff there, too.
Yeah, I'm impressed with some of the new food offerings. And there's, you know, at first I wasn't really excited about this, but, you know, I like Pixar. Yeah. But I thought, oh, you know, all Pixar all the time. But it looks like they're doing a good job of this. I'm really excited to see the new floats that are coming out on the parades.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled that Paint the Night is coming back. And with a new float, and also whatever the Pixar Play Parade, whatever it is that that parade is, it's coming back, and they have some new floats on that. So, so I'm really looking forward to it.
I am as well, for sure. I love Pixar, and, you know, I think this will obviously have more of an appeal to people like me who are visiting for... Maybe they're one time for the year, maybe for the first time in many years. But for locals, they might get tired of it pretty quickly. But you know what? So be it. It's going to be great for a lot of people out there.
I don't know. The way the park attendance has been, locals don't seem to be getting tired of that place. I mean, yeah. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So anyway, I can only imagine when... Star Wars Land opens next year.
Help us all.
I know. It has me very worried. But when I'm down there, too, you can... I don't know if Connecting with Walt listeners, you know, you may know that, you know, there's a lot of great video that Craig and our Orlando team, our Walt Disney World team, does for, you know, the Walt Disney World side of the kingdom. But, you know, out here we started our Best and Worst of Disneyland video series. We had Tyler on a few weeks ago who puts those together. And I'm going to be making an appearance on that series.
So yeah.
Take a look for me out there. And, of course, I'm going to connect Walt to what I'm doing for that show.
So. As we do.
Yes, as we do. So, well, speaking of Disneyland, those of you who tuned in last week know that Craig and I have brought over from our Disneyland show, my 60 Years of Disneyland series, and we're going to finish it up over the course of time over here on Connecting with Walt. And last week we started 60 Years of Disneyland, the New Millennium. And we started, part one was 2000. And we started into the very beginning of the year 2001 with all the excitement building up for Disney's California Adventure. And boy, we read all those press releases and, you know, Michael Eisner's dedication and Barry Braverman. I thought, oh boy, I can hardly wait to get into this park. And so we're going to join a few hundred who were there when Michael Eisner threw open the golden gates of Disney's California Adventure to see what the park offered on that beautiful February day in 2001.
Let's do it.
So, Disney's California Adventure, of course, celebrates the adventure spirit and culture of the state of California into four themed lands: A Bug's Land, Golden State, Paradise Pier, and Hollywood Pictures Backlot. Each is divided into themed districts. The entrance to Disney's California Adventure showcases the world's largest ceramic mural of California landmarks. The entrance also features large letters spelling out the state's name, and which were favorite photo opportunities for folks. Now, this entrance, when you step back and took a look at the whole entrance with this mosaic and these letters, and then the stylized Golden Gate Bridge in the background that we'll get into in a moment. This is supposed to depict a large panoramic postcard of the state. I don't know how many people caught on to that.
I did.
But yeah, so I don't know if people stepped back far enough to figure that one out.
Oh,
so
they did. They stepped all the way back, and then they ended up in Disneyland. And then they just turned around and kept going.
Yeah. Yes. That is what happened to this poor park. So, but it was a beautiful mosaic.
Oh yeah, I wish I would have got to see that in person. Yeah.
Now, we walk through the entrance past shops into the Sunshine Plaza. The monorail track is a bridge designed to look like San Francisco's Golden Gate Bridge. But don't get too excited about riding the monorail to Disney's Grand Californian Hotel, Downtown Disney, or Disneyland. There is no monorail station in California Adventure. What draws our attention to Sunshine Plaza is the Sun Icon, which Disneyland pass holders would call the hubcap. To counter the problem of the Sun Icon being backlit by the real sun because it faces north, tall, unsightly reflectors were constructed, which in theory were supposed to follow the sun and reflect sunlight into the Sun Icon. It was good in its concept.
Yeah.
Didn't work. At the base of the Sun Icon is the Wave Fountain, and coins tossed in to make a wish are donated to local charities. The portal to all the major areas of Disney's California Adventure Park, the Sunshine Plaza, is also a prime location for guests to rest or catch a parade. The plaza's centerpiece is that 50-foot-tall sun sitting atop the perpetual wave fountain, which glistens during the day and is lit by a dazzling spectacle of red, orange, and yellow lights at night. Now, Disneyland has a train when you enter that park, and so does California Adventure, although this train doesn't go anywhere. This diesel locomotive and its coaches are called the California Zephyr and painted in the colors of the Western Pacific Railroad to reflect the Zephyr of the 1950s and 60s. The number on the cab, 804-A, was the number on the final westbound California Zephyr from Chicago when it arrived in Oakland on March 20th, 1970. This California Zephyr is actually a building facade with entrances to three shops. The locomotive is the entrance to Burbank Ice Cream. Behind it, the silver platter dining car is the entrance to the Bakersfield Bakery. And at the rear of the train, the silver crescent Vista Dome observation car is the side entrance to Engine Ears Toys.
I'm just going to pretend that the silver platter dining car was the A nod to the Brady Bunch.
Yeah. So the Brady Bunch. Okay, I should get that reference.
Oh, that was the name of their group, the Silver Platters, when they performed in the variety show to try to win their mom the Silver Platter.
Okay, now I remember. I remember the Silver Platter.
Yeah, that's awful reference. I'm so sorry to everyone out there. I apologize.
Oh, it's fine. We baby boomers appreciated it. So, across the street, you have to try to tie in a Partridge Family reference as we go along here.
I'll figure out a way.
Across the street is Greetings from California, where you can find everything under the sun. And it's the quintessential Disney's California Adventure Park shopping experience, where guests can discover souvenirs, mementos, and take home lots of Disney memories. If you can't tell, I'm reading a lot of this from the brochures of the day.
Left the trademark in the script.
I did, as I just copied it right out of there. This shop has multiple entrances, each with its own theme. The front entrance is built into a large ceramic mural at the entrance to the park that we just talked about. And then after crossing beneath the Golden Gate Bridge monorail track, there's another shop entrance. And a large sign for the shop continues and carries forward the California postcard theme of the park entrance. And as a finishing touch, there's a giant fountain pen on the postcard theme sign. And around the corner from the side entrance, the corner entrance with four double doors is reminiscent of the streamlined modern architecture of Los Angeles in the 1930s. And on the roof of this entrance is a tower with a sphere held by three pylons designed to be a homage to the Globe Tower at Crossroads of the World on Sunset Boulevard in Hollywood. Now, Craig, are you imagining now, of course, what this all looks like today? As Buena Vista Street?
I've been trying. It is very difficult, though. Yeah. I have to be honest.
They kept quite a bit of this, and so the entrances and all that.
Yeah, it all sounds familiar, but at the same time, it's just still very difficult.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, well, now, Craig, if you finished your shopping, let's explore the Districts of California Adventure. So we'll stop off at the closest one. That's Hollywood Pictures Backlot. This is Hollywood as a state of mind, not as a real place, but as a backlot movie set surrounded by huge sound stages housing attractions, which give guests fun-filled ways to pretend they're Hollywood celebrities. They can imagine themselves as movie starlets, character voices, or extras having lunch on a movie set. A traditional landmark water tower at the rear of the lot bears the name Hollywood Pictures Backlot. And some of the area's attractions include Superstar Limo, which is a dark ride that takes riders through a cartoony version of Hollywood, spotting some celebrities like Regis Philbin, Drew Carey, and Whoopi Goldberg.
It's so funny.
It's just a horror.
It's hilarious. I mean, find the video of it on YouTube.
Yes.
I was so happy that on social media very recently, there was, at least on Twitter, there was a picture of the side-by-side of the Drew Carey, not animatronic, but...
The figure?
Figure, yeah, the Drew Carey figure, with a comparison of the exact same figure that they put in Monsters, Inc.
Yeah.
That they literally just slapped on a suit on top
the,
of it.
The yellow hazmat suit.
Oh my gosh, it was so funny, because I didn't even know that that's all they did with those figures.
Yep. Yeah, they did. That's all they did. So Whoopi Goldberg is down there, and...
funny.
Yeah. Hyperion Theater is a state-of-the-art venue that presents live stage performances. Muppet Vision 3D is a 3D show featuring the Muppets in 3D, hence the name. There's the Disney Animation Academy, and that's, of course, is a presentation on how to draw Disney characters. There's Character Close-Up, and that's a show where guests can view all Disney characters close-up. There's the Sorcerer's Workshop, and that's a presentation where guests can create their own animation. And then there's the Hollywood Backlot Stage, and that's a small stage that's considered Disney California Adventure's Performing Center. So, Craig, if you're hungry, we can sit down at your favorite soap opera setting at the ABC Television Soap Opera Bistro. You can choose to dine at the General Hospital's nurse's station in a hospital surrounded by medical decor. A portrait of Adam Chandler watches over the dining room based on the Chandler Mansion from All My Children, where it's always Christmas. Another dining room recreates the Landview Country Club from One Life to Live, complete with a wedding gazebo. The servers wear costumes themed to the various television shows and settings and are also improvisational actors and actresses who draw guests into being a part of each television show as they dine.
Oh, goodness gracious. Mr. Braverson did not deserve a job after coming up with this one.
Well, this was their prime time, you know, Hollywood's, you know, prime time. '50s prime time cafe.
I under.
This yeah. was their version of it.
I get
we
it.
We ate here.
Why?
Carol was in. These were all her soap operas: General yeah. Hospital and One Life to Live. She was in Hog Heaven.
Yeah, my mom was more of a guiding light type of person.
Yeah, yeah. Well, see, because I learned that people that watch soap operas, they're loyal to a network.
Yes, yes.
And Carol was ABC.
Goodness.
And there was a lot more to this. There was a whole lot more to General Hospital than just this. But yeah, all this action was going on around us, and our children were young, and we're just sitting there. We have no idea what's going on. But Carol enjoyed it.
I'm stunned.
Yeah. It didn't last long. Now let's wander over to the Bountiful Valley Farm, which celebrates California's role as the nation's number one producer of farm products and is whimsically themed to A Bug's Land. This is covering 2.5 acres. The farm is planted with a colorful variety of flowers and is decorated with playful sculptures depicting the stars of A Bug's Life. It also features the Ugly Bug Ball stage show with Flick and Atta, caterpillar tractors, a water play irrigation station, the PT Flea Market, which was a little tiny shopping area, and favorite foods at the Bountiful Valley Farmers Market. This was reportedly Michael Eisner's favorite district in the park. I think he liked the caterpillar tractors.
It sounds fun.
Yeah. So now let's go check out the Golden State District. This celebrates the adventurous heritage of California and the immigrants who came looking for the golden dream. Golden State features 5 themed areas, including Condor Flats, Grizzly Peak Recreation Area, the Golden Vine Winery, Pacific Wharf, and the Bay Area. Now, Condor Flats is a high desert test pilot's landing field with weathered hangars left over from man's first attempts to break the sound barrier. The one attraction here is Soarin' Over California, in which guests soar and swoop over famous California landmarks. So one attraction was popular in this park. Grizzly Peak Recreation Area is a granite mountaintop shaped by nature like the head of a growling grizzly bear, and it rises 110 feet over a high Sierra landscape with pine and snow-covered slopes of the Grizzly River Run, the world's highest, longest, and fastest Russian River raft ride. Grizzly Peak serves as the icon for Disney's California Adventure on the new Disneyland Resort logo.
Wait, so was this not popular when it opened?
This was popular, but okay, Soarin' was like the breakout.
Oh yeah, no, Soarin's a superstar.
And California's screaming.
Yeah, I can imagine. So, yeah.
Yeah. Redwood Creek Challenge Trail is a play area for youngsters, featuring a Mount Shasta wilderness-like setting and suspension and wire bridges. It also has rock climbing and a Brother Bear scene cave. Adventurous adults can also enjoy this area. The centerpiece of the Bay Area is a 45-foot-tall replica of the Rotunda of San Francisco's Palace of Fine Arts within a beautifully landscaped garden beside Paradise Bay. A 14 by 100-foot mural lining the colonnade introduces the themes, characters, and stories of the Golden Dreams attraction. And Golden Dreams is a 22-minute motion picture housed in a 350-seat theater that tells the story of California through the eyes of her immigrants. The film features actress Whoopi Goldberg as the legendary Calafia, Queen of California. And this was actually a pretty good film.
Yeah, I've only heard from people who had the opportunity to see it that they're deeply upset that it's no longer around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was well done. I had a hard time. I never imagined Calathea as Whoopi Goldberg, so that was a little tough for me. But otherwise, I thought it was pretty well done.
I mean, it's understandable.
Yeah. Because Calathea, of course, we learned about her. She was more of growing up in California, she was more of a leader of Amazon women, you know, this legendary tribe. And somehow, I don't know, Whoopi Goldberg just didn't.
Yeah, I wouldn't
place
them together. I
didn't imagine Whoopi Goldberg with that. So anyway, the Golden Vine Winery is in a vineyard of 350 growing grapes and a mission-style building. Guests can learn about the winemaking process, enjoy fine dining, and taste wines in this first pressing of Napa Valley culture. And then there's the Seasons of the Vine Theater, and it features a film about California's wine country, which actually that was an interesting film. Let's cross over to the Pacific Wharf District. That features two factory-style tours. The Mission Tortilla Factory, which was a close-up look on tortilla production. They had these cute little, like, diorama things that you looked in.
Hmm.
And then the Bakery Tour was a presentation on how sourdough bread is made and about the Boudin Bakery. And you got samples in both of these, which was nice.
Gotta get that sample of sourdough bread.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then this leads us to Paradise Pier. Here are electrifying experiences from the glory days of California's seaside amusement piers, when they were magnets for sun-seeking and fun-loving kings, movie stars, and crowds of thrill-seekers. Now, some of the area's attractions include California Screamin', one of the fastest steel roller coasters in the United States, and it's modeled after a traditional boardwalk wooden roller coaster. The Mally Boomer, that's a drop ride that launches 180 feet in 4 seconds. The Sun Wheel, that's a Ferris wheel ride with both swinging and stationary gondolas. Mulholland Madness, and this is a Wild Mouse style roller coaster, and it was sort of themed to Los Angeles's Mulholland Drive. The Orange Stinger, these are swings that revolve around a giant orange. You could almost smell the oranges. Actually, you could. They had the smellitzers in there that would squirt out orange scent.
Hmm.
There's the Golden Zephyr. It's a spinner ride offering a similar experience as Dumbo the Flying Elephant and the Astro Orbiter across the Esplanade in Disneyland. There was King's Triton Carousel, and there's a little carousel that had sea creatures. As its animals. Jumpin' Jellyfish was a mini drop ride, and the SS Rustworthy, this was a play area for youngsters, and it was themed to an old grounded steamship. And then there were the games of the boardwalk. These were boardwalk-like games of chance, similar to games found at state and county fairs, for which you there was an extra charge, of course.
See, for some reason, I thought when they started to redo the area, I mean, I obviously knew that the Maliboomer got the axe, but I could have swore that there was more things that actually got taken away, but I guess that's not the case.
No, a lot of it just got rethemed.
Yeah.
So, but it's all still there, and it's getting rethemed again.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, before leaving the park, first of all, what do you think so far of all of these districts of the brand new Disney's California Adventure, Craig?
Man, just such a mishmash all over the place. Honestly, it's the two things that stick out for me is, like, interesting are the Golden State District, as well as Paradise Pier. And I mean, those areas are two of my favorite parts of the park still to this day. Mm-hmm. So I understand why they were successful. You know, I don't think you have to say much more about Hollywood Pictures backlot than we've already said. And there's no point in talking anything at all about A Bug's Land, because I'm sure we'll be doing a tribute episode to it very soon here. But yeah.
And the one that we know as A Bug's Land hasn't even been built yet.
Yeah, exactly. But it's, you know, it's the park definitely had issues, but I will say, back in 2001 when this opened up, I desperately wanted to get back out to California to see all of this. And I am grateful that at the one hand that I didn't get to see it, because I only know of California Adventure is from that first trip as an adult, getting to see it as the perfect park. But deep down, I still kind of wish I could have at least got one day to go inside and see how much of a mess this place was.
Yeah, it was surprising when we first went into it.
It was funny because
I always thought this would have been, I think it would have been very successful in Orlando. It felt like it was an Orlando park where attractions were spread out, and there were a lot of dining venues and things like that. I think if, of course, we copied half the attractions from, you know, Orlando over, but it had that feel to it.
I agree.
Whereas, you know, Disneyland, you know, one of the things people say it's very intimate is because everything's like right on top of each other. You leave when you exit an attraction, you're in the queue for the one next to it.
Yeah.
You know, it's a boom, boom, boom. And I think that the expectations just weren't set.
Yeah. And I understand how it wasn't super unique, especially with a lot of the off the shelf attractions in Paradise Pier. You know, I love California Screamin'. I will love the next iteration of it involving the Incredibles, but I've never been to Magic Mountain. But I know for a fact that you could go to Magic Mountain and there's probably at least five coasters there that are better than California Screamin'. And I know over at Knott's Berry Farm, there's at least two roller coasters that are better than California Screamin'. So if you're going to build off the shelf stuff like that, it's got to be impressive. It's got to be something to want to draw you in. Not just say, oh, well, you know, I could go there and do these, or I could go to these other parks that are also in California close by and cost a lot less money to go to and have these awesome, awesome rides. But it was a tough time.
It was. It really was for this park. Now, before leaving the park, we can't miss Disney's California Adventures Daytime Parade called Disney's Eureka, a California Parade. And Eureka celebrates the various cultures of California, and it's also the name of the deity who appears throughout the parade. And she changes to match the theme of each parade unit. The parade plays the song Come Away With Me, with each unit playing a variation of the song. So the center of the sun icon at the start of the parade plays the main song. Then there's an Aztec-inspired bird head-dressed essence of Hispanic culture. And in this one, Hispanic California, I should say. And this song is sung in both English and Spanish. Then the next unit is the Angel of the City of Angels. That's Los Angeles. And his song is sung as a rap. Then the next unit is Sun Worshipping Beach Beauty of the Beach Scene, and there's an instrumental beach rock cover. Then there's the Chinese Opera Goddess of Chinatown, and that's the instrumental Chinese cover. And then we have the Golden Goddess of the Golden State for the finale, and that's a combination of the opening Hispanic and Los Angeles units. And I actually enjoyed this parade. I liked it. It was very different.
On paper, it sounds cool.
Yeah, it didn't have any, you know, Disney characters in it, but I thought it was unique and different, so I enjoyed it.
Yeah, the only thing that is kind of throwing me off is the rap part, but other than that, it does sound cool.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're very street here in California.
Yeah. Of course.
So, now, guests, as we've been alluding to, guests simply weren't interested in what California Adventure had to offer, and most considered it a half-day park at best. A Disney Imagineer and sculptor, Blaine Gibson, said, "I'm not saying this to defame Mike Eisner, but he came up with California Adventure right adjacent to Disneyland. People went in there and they'd say, 'No, I want to go back to Disneyland.' My feeling is that Disneyland had heart. Walt and the people who chose to work on it, everybody put their hearts into what they did. And a lot of the other kinds of parks are done by people who do it professionally, but they don't have that same intense feeling about it. Several quick fix solutions were added to the park to try to help before new major attractions could be added. One of the first was bringing the Main Street Electrical Parade out of retirement. This beloved Disneyland parade had glowed away from Disneyland in 1997 and returned to light up the pathways of California Adventure on July 2nd to honor the first summer of the park, and in an attempt to keep guests from crossing the Esplanade into Disneyland after sunset. The Main Street Electrical Parade was only marginally successful at this. Another quick fix was the construction of a soundstage for Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Play It, which opened on September 13th. Guests played a real game of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, except with points instead of dollars. Including the 10 players in the Ring of Fire, which includes video screens, down on the stage, the entire audience can play the fastest finger game, in which players have to put certain items in order, such as put these American cities in order from east to west. Unfortunately, this attraction opened 2 days after the attacks against the United States on September 11th, which significantly affected tourism. To make it worse, the ratings were on the decline for the television version of Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Disney's California Adventure marked the end of Michael Eisner's Disney decade of hit after hit. The park's failure to live up to Disney standards for theming, popularity, and income fueled criticism of Disney management from fans and critics outside the company, as well as from many influential persons within. Disney's marketing and explanation for California Adventure wasn't helped when Tokyo DisneySea opened to rave reviews later in 2001, eventually winning multiple Theme Park Insider Awards as the world's best theme park. In all of 2001, Disney's California Adventure welcomed only 5 million visitors, just over one-third of those who attended Disneyland in its first year. And of those that did visit Disney's California Adventure, only 20% surveyed said they were satisfied with their experience.
That is a great approval rating.
Yeah.
It's just what you want.
The embarrassing failure of Disney's California Adventure, dropping ratings for the ABC television networks, and other problems within the Walt Disney Company contributed to a public split between Walt Disney's nephew Roy E. Disney and Michael Eisner, which contributed to Eisner's exit as CEO in 2005. Not all the action was happening in the former Disneyland parking lot, though. Over at Disneyland, the Walt Disney Story featuring great moments with Mr. Lincoln reopened on July 17th with a new story, The Journey to Gettysburg. This version focused on the American Civil War, although it still retained the name The Walt Disney Story featuring great moments with Mr. Lincoln. In the pre-show, guests were introduced to American Civil War photographer Matthew Brady, and they assumed the role of a fictitious Union soldier named John Cunningham. They then entered the main theater, where they wore special headphones with binaural sound technology to give guests the sensation that the action was taking place all around them. In the show, Cunningham met Brady in his photography studio, received a haircut, went back to battle, and was eventually wounded. He then met President Abraham Lincoln and attended the Gettysburg Address in person. At this point, the curtains opened to reveal Lincoln standing on the stage to deliver the address. As Lincoln gave the address, the background behind him changed from a normal day to a sky at dawn. Closing the show was a rendition of the Battle Hymn of the Republic. As the music was played, the background changed to form the American flag. As Lincoln sat down in his chair, a painting of the statue located at the Lincoln Memorial covered the night sky. And at this point, the curtains began to descend and the 12-minute program ended. For this show, the Paul Frees and Royal Dano recordings were replaced by Corey Burton, who voiced Matthew Brady, and Warren Burton, who provided the voice of Lincoln. The set was also redone. The background curtains, as well as a replica of the U.S. Capitol's rotunda, were removed. The chair where Lincoln sat down was replaced with a small wooden chair. The small pillars behind the chair were also removed and replaced with plants and flowers. The large pillars from the previous versions of the show still remained. The Lincoln audio animatronic figure was also given an upgrade. Its beard was longer to match with Lincoln's old age. It was also given a pair of eyeglasses as well as a short-sized paper. The main theater was also given a small refurbishment, with both sides walls featuring portraits of Civil War soldiers. The show was not well received by guests. did you ever see this version
of Great Shots of Mr. Lincoln? No, I don't believe I did. I mean, parts of it sound similar, but no, I don't think so.
It was very gimmicky, and I was very happy when this went away.
Yeah, it's I can understand. So it's you know, when you're handling a subject like Lincoln, you have to really watch. He's very beloved.
Yeah. Now, Rancho de Zocalo opened in Frontierland on February 6th. It was formerly the Casa Mexicana, and before that, Casa de Fritos. Rancho de Zocalo means Ranch of the Square, and the word Zocalo does have a history at Disneyland. The open area at the entrance to Frontierland used to be called El Zocalo, or Town Square. On January 21st, Disneyland guests were disappointed by the closing of Frontierland's Big Thunder Barbecue. Christmas has become a big business at Disneyland, with its elaborate decorations, special festivities, and the popular It's a Small World holiday overlay. The Walt Disney Entertainment creative team began looking at other attractions and their potential for having holiday overlays, and began developing ideas for the Haunted Mansion in New Orleans Square. On October 5, 2001, the Haunted Mansion holiday, based on 1993's The Nightmare Before Christmas, opened. And if you'd like to learn more about the history of this holiday favorite, you'll want to listen to my episode about the Haunted Mansion holiday on the Dis Unplugged Podcast Disneyland edition from November 19th, 2017. And we'll have a link to that episode in our show notes. On September 9th, the Country Bears played their last hoedown and were evicted from their playhouse to make way for another bear. Curiously, Walt Disney Pictures had the Country Bears film in production based on the attraction. When the film opened in 2002, the Disneyland attraction was gone. So much for synergy.
I don't think it would have mattered anyways. It's not very often where I say I don't like a Disney movie, and it's never happened where I said I disliked anything involving Country Bears. Except for the movie Country Bears.
Oh, yeah. It wasn't one of their stellar films.
Now you're the one who's being too nice about it.
So, now, for many of our listeners, any mention of 2001 brings back memories of September 11th and the terrorist attacks against the United States on the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, and the passenger takeover of United Flight 93 over Pennsylvania before the terrorists could reach their intended target. When the attack began that Tuesday morning, Disneyland and Disney's California Adventure had not yet opened to guests. About that day, the Orange County Register wrote, "Southern California theme parks closed Tuesday, fearful of becoming targets following terrorist attacks on the East Coast. Downtown Disney was also closed Tuesday and ringed by guards. Other closures included Knott's Berry Farm in Buena Park, Universal Studios in Universal City, Legoland in Carlsbad, and San Diego SeaWorld. It's the first time Disneyland has had an unscheduled closure since the assassination of President Kennedy in 1963, although Disneyland and Knott's do occasionally close during bad weather. Guests at Disney's hotels said that they couldn't get flights home because the nation's airports were closed. They couldn't rent a car and leave because car rental agencies were either closed or only renting for local travel. Later in the day, some, such as Avis, began renting cars. So children hugged Chip and Dale at the Storyteller Cafe at the Grand Californian Hotel, and Disney offered free movies, It's Tough to Be a Bug and Father of the Bride. Despite the cool day, some wandered into the pool. Others walked around Anaheim, stunned and unsure what to do. Security guards and staff lined and patrolled the Disneyland Resort, not letting in anyone who wasn't a hotel guest. People coming to the Grand Californian had to show identification. No one was allowed near the theme parks as lines of security guards blocked access. Disneyland and Disney's California Adventure were swept for bombs by specially trained dogs. When the parks reopened, security in the parks was increased in several ways, seen and unseen by guests. On September 12th, guests entering the parks had to have their bags searched first, a practice that continues today. A uniformed police presence outside and inside the parks was also increased. Anaheim police cars were parked outside the entrances to the Disneyland Resort, and for the first time, uniformed officers were seen by guests inside the parks. On the Friday after the attacks, the president asked the country to observe a moment of silence, and Disneyland participated, as well as Reuters reported. Observing a moment of silence on Friday, in keeping with a request to the nation by President George W. Bush, the country's best-known theme park shut down its rides, shows, and music as guests on Main Street turned to face flags and sing God Bless America. One reported change that did not happen was a name change for Disney California Adventure's version of the Tower of Terror. On September 21st, the Orange County Register reported, Anaheim Disney has started construction on a Tower of Terror ride at its new California Adventure theme park. The ride is like the popular Twilight Zone Tower of Terror ride at Disney World in Florida, built in 1994. However, because of the terrorist attacks on New York's World Trade Center towers last week, the Anaheim version of the ride will be called something different. Since 9/11, U.S. flags have been ordered to half staff to honor the fallen. President Bush ordered all U.S. flags back to full stage on September 23rd. Disneyland commemorated the event with a ceremony hosted by CEO Michael Eisner and Disneyland President Cynthia Harris. Also in the ceremony to sing God Bless America was Disneyland entertainer Eden Espinosa, who'd go on to become a well-known stage, film, and television actress. The September 11th terrorist attacks significantly reduced international travel and created a worldwide recession. The Walt Disney Company enacted 800 expense-saving measures in the hope of saving up to $250 million. This included layoffs and a freeze in hiring and salaries. One of the cost-cutting measures at Disneyland was the closing of the Sleeping Beauty walkthrough on October 7th for refurbishment. Sleeping Beauty walkthrough eventually dropped off the refurbishment list and its sign was removed from its castle entrance. Disneyland executives never announced a permanent closing and never provided an official reason. There was widespread speculation on Disney internet fan sites that the real reason for the closure was over security concerns. Despite the attacks of 9/11, 13.3 million guests visited the Disneyland Resort in 2001, thanks in part to the opening of Disney's California Adventure, the Grand Californian Resort and Spa, and Downtown Disney. So join us next time when we continue our series 60 Years of Disneyland by taking a look at the years 2003 through 2005. Well, here we are. We're at that point in the show. I know it's your favorite, Craig. It's this day in Disney history quiz. And this time, we're here at the week of April 21st. And we're welcoming back the beleaguered but chipper Tyler Crouch.
I'm back.
You are back. Boy, you're a fighter.
I won't let go. I won't stop until this I don't even know. I was going to call him a menace, but he's not a menace. He's a nice guy. No. Until he's stopped.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and Tyler, of course, is my colleague as part of the West Coast team of the Diz Unplugged. So, you know, we visit Walt's original kingdom, you know, in here. You know, it's because, as you know, Craig is part of the Walt Disney World kingdom out there. So it's nice to have someone from my team, you know, here on the Connecting with Walt West Coast.
Nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Well, I know you know the rules, Tyler, but for our friends who might be new to the show, the rules for this day in Disney history quiz, you know, this is about all things Disney. We test the knowledge of Craig and Tyler to see how good is their knowledge about what's going on in the world of Disney theme parks, Disney music, Disney films, Disney history, the world of Walt, whatever might have happened during this week. So if you choose not to hear the multiple choice answers, you will receive 3 points for correct answer. If I give you the multiple choice answers, you will get 2 points for correct answer. If I take away an incorrect answer, you get 1 point if you answer it correctly. Or if your opponent gets the incorrect answer, you can answer it correctly for 1 point. For our friends at home, play along, but no Googling, Binging, Yahooing, or whatever else is out there. So, okay, are both you boys ready to roll here?
Oh, yeah, I think that I am.
Okay, all right.
Roll out.
Okay,
like
Tyler.
A Transformer. Sorry.
That's another franchise. Okay. Okay, Tyler, as our guest, would you like to receive the first answer or gift it to Craig?
You know what? I'm gonna have to take the first question again.
Okay.
Sounds I haven't
good.
Won one yet, so it's got to happen this time, right?
Right. That's right. Yeah, this is it. I just, you know, I feel the pixie dust is upon you this time around. Okay. All right.
I felt a tingle. I didn't know it was pixie dust.
All right. Okay, so it's April 21st. In a press release on April 21st, 2008, the Walt Disney Company makes a major announcement. What is it?
I think it could be one of two things, but I'm going to have to do the multiple choice.
All right. Is it A, the Disney MGM Studios would be renamed Disney Hollywood Studios? B, a deal to acquire Marvel Entertainment for $4.24 billion? C, Brent Iwan would be the next voice of Mickey Mouse after the passing of Wayne Allwine? Or D, the launch of the Disney Nature production banner? April 21st, 2008.
So, I think, and one of the things you said was one of the two choices that was bopping through my head before we did the multiple choices. But I could be incredibly wrong about this. It's hard for me to get my time straight sometimes, but I'm going to go with the Marvel deal.
Okay. All right, final answer.
Yeah.
Okay, that was actually 2009.
Oh,
so, okay. All righty, Craig, would you like to take a try at this one?
Yeah, and I'm going to be... It makes no sense because I feel like it would be announced the very next day. But I'm going to say the logo for Disney Nature, even though it would make more sense the next day on Earth Day.
Right. That was the hint. That's right. In a press release, Disney announces the launching of Disney Nature, a prestigious new production banner that will literally go to the ends of the earth to produce major big screen nature documentaries. And in the tradition of the old True Life Adventure series, the first film to be released domestically under Disney Nature will be Earth in April 2009.
Wait, was I right?
You were right.
Oh, well.
You didn't get that out of all that, huh?
No, I mean, usually you don't explain it when we get it wrong, but I had to ask. So,
Anyway, yep, you got it right. Yeah, that Earth Day date there. Was it? Okay, a good series. Okay, all right. Craig, now to you, your question for April 22nd. Walt Disney reaches out to the world at this event on April 22nd, 1964. What is this event?
Multiple choice.
Okay, said A, the opening of the 1964-65 New York World's Fair. B, the debut of a limited series of episodes from the Wonderful World of Disney television series in the United Kingdom, France, Italy, and Japan. C, the announcement of the premiere dates of four feature-length films, all set in Europe, The Three Lives of Thomasina, The Moon Spinners, Mary Poppins, and Emile and the Detectives. D, the appointment of Disneyland's first ambassador, Julie Ream, who will begin a worldwide tour promoting the 10th anniversary of Disneyland.
I am going to go with... You know what? I'm willing to just take a bold move and lose a point on it. I'm going to go with D.
The appointment of Disneyland's first ambassador?
Yeah.
That is incorrect.
Yeah.
Okay, Tyler.
Wow, so, that was my favorite answer. So.
All right. Well, okay. Walt Disney reaches out to the world at this event on April 22nd, 1964, was at the opening of the 64-65 New York World's Fair, a debut of limited series of episodes in the Wonderful World of Disney television series, or in United Kingdom, France, Italy, and Japan, or the announcement of the premiere dates of four feature-length films all set in Europe.
Well... I'm sorry, what was the first one more time?
The opening of the 1964-65 New York World's Fair.
Right. I don't know. I mean, you're so good at writing these answers, Michael. They all sound so plausible every single time, which I guess is the point, right?
Exactly.
But I'm going to have to... I mean, the one that just stands out to me is... is A, the World's Fair. So I'm just going to have to go with that one.
Okay, and you are correct. The World's Fair in Flushing, New York is opened by U.S. President Johnson for the 64th season. The fair features over 100 pavilions on approximately 646 acres. The fair also includes four Disney attractions for Ford, General Electric, Pepsi-Cola, and the state of Illinois. An opening day ceremony takes place with a special parade that includes several Disney characters, such as Mickey Mouse, Pinocchio, and Alice in Wonderland. On a VIP observation deck above It's a Small World, located in the Pepsi Pavilion, Disney representatives, including designer and artist Mary Blair, celebrate the team who has put together the exhibit from scratch in just 9 months. And despite it being a rainy day, some 92,000 people visit the fair that day.
Wow.
See, I just figured that was too obvious to be a correct answer, but hey.
See, and that's why that's why I brought up the answers, because I was like, you know, I mean, that one sounds so obvious, like you said, Craig, but it's just, I don't know, it was the one that just really spoke to me.
That's right. That's right. Sometimes the obvious is the correct one. All right. Okay, Tyler, here you go. You can pull ahead because it's 1-1.
Let's do it.
Okay. What classic Disneyland attraction opened on April 23rd, 1957?
I'm going to have to do multiple choice.
Okay. Is it A, Alice in Wonderland? B, Midgetopia? C, Mike Finn Keelboats, or D, TWA Rocket to the Moon?
That didn't make it that much easier. let's see. 57.
So you have to figure out which of these were opening day attractions, which of these...
I know, yeah, that's the really tough part, is figuring out which ones were there with the park and which weren't. But I don't think it was the keel boats. But watch, that was probably it, huh? Can I get the answers again one more time?
Sure. It's A, Alice in Wonderland, B, Midget Utopia, C, Mike Finn Keelboats, or D, TWA Rocket to the Moon.
Well, 57. I don't think that... You know what? I'm going to have to go with A. A is my final answer.
Alice in Wonderland, that classic 1958 attraction. Okay, nope, that's not it. Okay, sorry. Okay, Craig, to you.
I'll go with Midget Autopia for the steal.
That is correct.
I was going with that one, and then I turned at the last moment.
See, you got to go with your first feeling there. It is the third and smallest Utopia track, following the Tomorrowland Utopia in 1955 and the Junior Utopia in Fantasyland in 1956. The Midget Utopia is located right next to the Storybookland Canal Boats, is for very young guests who are too small to ride the other Utopia attractions. It will close in April 1966 to make room for It's a Small World and be donated to Walt Disney's boyhood home of Marceline, Missouri.
Yeah, and I mean, I was at an advantage for that because Michael and I have talked about the Midget Utopia at least three different occasions now, I think, gotcha. On Connecting with Walt. So it's burned in the brain.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All righty. Okay, April 24th, Craig. What Disney television series premiered on April 24th, 1989?
Do I want to be bold? No, I'll do multiple choice.
Okay, is it A, Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, B, DuckTales, C, The New Mickey Mouse Club, or D, Tailspin?
My initial guess that I was going to do... wow, that is great grammar, Craig. My initial guess without needing multiple choice was going to be Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, so I'm going to just stick with that.
Okay. You are very close. That debuted a little earlier on March 4th. So, okay, no. Tyler, here you go. It is now to you. It was DuckTales, The New Mickey Mouse Club, or Tailspin premiere on April 24th, 1989?
You know, if Rescue Rangers was happening around that time, I would have to assume that Tailspin couldn't have been long. You know, they must have been around the same time. So I'm going to have to go Tailspin.
Okay. Tailspin was 1990.
Yeah, Mickey Mouse Club, right?
It's the Mickey Mouse Club. MMC, also known as the all-new Mickey Mouse Club. It debuted on Disney Channel with host Fred Newman. This show is a mix of live skits, recorded comedy, and songs. The Mouseketeers perform their own version of popular songs live and in music videos. Today is Music Day. Was the premiere. The cast over the years will include future stars like singer Britney Spears, Justin Timberlake, Ryan Gosling, and Christina Aguilera, and Carrie Russell, and members of NSYNC. Anyway, okay, Tyler, this is yours. April 25th, 1998. Time Magazine features an article titled, Do You Believe in Magic? Who appeared on the magazine's cover?
I'm going to have to do the multiple choice. I have no clue.
Okay. All right. A, is it Mickey Mouse, Minnie Mouse, Donald Duck, and Goofy? B, Snow White, Cinderella, Peter Pan, Tinkerbell, Mickey Mouse, and Jiminy Cricket? C, Michael Eisner, Frank Wells, and Roy E. Disney, or D, Michael Eisner and Mickey Mouse? This is April 25th, 1998.
Okay. I think I'm going to go with D. Michael Eisner and Mickey Mouse, because that just sounds like that time period. Sounds very obvious, but I'm just going for it, Michael. Let's dive in.
Well, and you know what? You made a big splash with that dive. That is correct.
Yes.
Okay. So, hey, you have pulled ahead.
What? I did it?
3-2.
Oh, man. What a day.
That is. Mm. That's it. Yes. Enjoy this moment.
I finally won one. I get to knock one out of the park on my final episode here.
That's right.
Don't we have? Is that the it, or do we still have a couple more questions?
Oh no! Yeah, you have like 3 more questions.
That's what I thought.
Oh. But we're just savoring this moment.
Okay.
I just wanted to pretend I was winning for a second, Craig. Just let me take it.
It's okay. All good. It's good.
Yes, you know, joy can be fleeting. Okay. All right. Okay, Craig, this one's for you. Oh, here we go. Okay, April 26th. This Disney Henson production debuted on April 26th, 1991.
One more time with the question, please.
This Disney Henson production debuted on April 26th, 1991. It is not Muppets in Liberty Square.
I might know this.
Yeah, I mean, there's only... I only have one guess for it, and that's Muppet Vision 3D.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah, I'll go bold on it. I don't want the multiple choice.
Okay, bold can be beautiful, but not in this case. That is incorrect. Okay, Tyler, over to you. You said you might know this. Is it the ABC television series Dinosaurs, Bear in the Big Blue House, or Muppet Treasure Island? Since you're stealing it, I can give you the answer.
This sucks.
Well, now see that's funny to me because I still don't really know it based on that. But even though Craig is like, "Oh, I absolutely know
it." It's simple now.
Oh boy. Okay. 1991. It couldn't have been. It couldn't have been the Bear in the Big Blue House. I feel like that came later. What was the first one? One more time.
The ABC television series Dinosaurs.
Yeah, I think it must be Dinosaurs.
And you are correct.
You are correct. Yeah. The Disney Henson television series Dinosaurs debuted on ABC. It's based on an idea by Jim Henson. The show features the live-action combination of audio, animatronic, and puppets. Only the second show to feature this technique. For folks who don't know, it's about a family of anthropomorphic prehistoric creatures. Dinosaurs is produced by Michael Jacobs Production and Jim Henson Productions in association with Walt Disney Television. I loved this show.
It was great. It was one of the most savage endings to a television show ever, though.
Yeah. So,
think about how the dinosaurs ended, and you can think about how the show ended.
Yeah, that was about it. Yeah. We know. I know Terry Harden, who was the puppeteer for Baby.
Oh, that's cool.
Cool.
Yeah,
cool.
Yeah.
Did they do the voices too?
No, they did. They had other actors, voice actors for this.
I didn't know how it worked. Yeah.
Okay. Tyler, hey, you are on a roll 4-2. You've pulled out ahead here. Okay. April 27th. Here you go. This Disney theme park attraction closed on April 27th, 2001.
Okay. I'm pretty sure I know what it is, but I've said that multiple times tonight, and I've been completely wrong. So let's go with the multiple choice.
Okay.
I have an idea, though.
All right. Is it A, the Main Street Electrical Parade at the Magic Kingdom of Walt Disney World? B, Doug Live at the Disney MGM Studios? C, the Country Bear Jamboree at Disneyland? Or D, Rocket Rods at Disneyland?
So you said one of them that I was thinking, so I'm just going to go with it. And once you said these multiple choices, though, like, again, you're very good at coming up with these answers. But I am still sticking with my original thought, which is D, Rocket Rods.
That's correct. Woo. Disneyland's Rocket Rods was this attraction was the centerpiece of New Tomorrowland. When the realm got a $100 million facelift in 1998, it closed forever. Although it was really closed since September 2000 for a refurbishment that was to last until spring 2001, no work was actually ever seen on the attraction. Despite efforts by designers and mechanics, the Rocket Rods was plagued with problems. This is basically a faster version of the People Mover, but they just finally closed her down on April 27, 2001. So there you go, 6-2, Craig. Oh my!
Yeah. Hey,
boy. Well, I had to make up for the other ones.
Yeah. Okay. So, Craig. Well, here you go. Yep. One final question here, so you can come close. Mickey Mouse appeared in New York City for this event on April 28th, 2012.
That I'm gonna say I'm just gonna be bold and guess. I think that would be the. Gosh, I think I'm gonna be completely wrong on this and embarrass myself. The inauguration of the Disney Dream.
You are correct. Well, wow. Yeah, that's it. Very bold and beautiful, Craig.
I know people who were on that cruise, and I know it was around that time period.
Mickey Mouse appears at Yankee Stadium to mark the official welcome of the Disney Cruise Line in New York City. Disney Cruise Line sponsors this day's game to celebrate its first ever sailing out of New York City. Disney sponsorship includes 100 tickets donated to the Boys and Girls Club, whilst the first 10,000 guests receive branded waterproof beach wallets. Guests who cruise with the Disney Cruise Line on its New York City itineraries will sail out of Manhattan. Wasn't the dream, it was the Disney Magic.
That was the Magic.
Right track.
Yeah. I knew and it was the.
Yeah, but I
wait.
I
does
knew
that count then?
Yeah, we're gonna count.
Technically, it doesn't. I wasn't gonna win anyway, so. Yeah,
the first ship in a Disney Cruise Line fleet. So anyway, very good. Tyler, congratulations. You won this round.
I finally did it. And thank you, Craig. You were an outstanding opponent.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
Yeah, so, you whooped my butt.
Yeah, but still, you were very respectable in this. And we don't want you to go without a lovely parting gift. And, of course, that is a year's supply of Johnson's Bravo floor wax. So brilliantly tough, you can wash it with detergents.
Yes, that's exactly what I needed. I don't know how you guys read my mind, but that's what I was going to Costco tomorrow for. So thank
you.
There
you go.
I love you all.
Thank you so much, Tyler. We really enjoyed having you on Connecting with Walt.
It's been really fun.
Yeah, I'll look forward to seeing you the next time I'm in Disneyland.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We got to get together.
Yep.
It's been really fun, and thank you for having me. I'll come back anytime.
Yeah, great. We'll look forward to having you back. And that's it for this week. This week in Disney History Quiz, we will have a new contestant to test Craig's wit and knowledge next week. The many books, films, articles, interviews, and lectures were sourced for this episode of 60 Years of Disneyland, including The Disneyland Story, The Unofficial Guide to the Evolution of Walt Disney's Dream by Sam Genoway. Then the following websites, the Orange County Register, the Los Angeles Times, Disney Extinct Attractions, the Disney Parks blog, the Disney Wiki, Laughing Place, and Yesterland. I'd also like to thank my lovely research assistant and wife, Carol Bowling, for her invaluable work locating the additional material I needed for this episode. So, Craig, until next time, where can our listeners connect with you on the Diz Unplugged?
Like always, you can find me Tuesdays on the Walt Disney World Edition, Thursdays on the Universal Edition, here, there, and everywhere on the Daily Fix. And if you need to contact me anywhere else, you can follow me on Twitter at Teleclashter, as well as on Instagram at the same handle, Teleclashter. What about you, Michael?
Well, as always, you can send me messages at michael@wdwinfo.com. Twitter, I'm at mbowling121. Facebook, I'm Michael Bowling. Instagram, I'm Michael Bowling the Diz. And of course, if you want to connect with me and Craig on Twitter, go to @ConnectingWalt. That is our official Connecting with Walt Twitter page. If you would like to listen to more shows on the history of Walt Disney, his studio, his Imagineers, and Disneyland, check out our Disneyland podcast archives for my Disney history episodes at disunplug.com, and look for past episodes of Connecting with Walt on iTunes, where you can subscribe to our show and leave some positive reviews and ratings. And thank you for making us a part of your day. And remember, I only hope that we don't lose sight of one thing, that it was all started by a man, Walt Disney, and his brother Roy.